Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, welcome back to Deep Dish Radio. I'm Tim Powers, and this is my show. My guest today is my pal Bobby Hart. Bobby was half of the songwriting duo Boyce and Hart, who not only changed the Constitution of the United States, but also wrote a zillion gold records and wrote the theme to the Monkees, and they wrote Last Train to Clarksville and their own hits. You're Still My Favorite Girlfriend, Alice Long, Out and About, I Wonder What She's Doing Tonight. Well, most recently, a new recording of a Boyce and Hart song has emerged on the new album Good Times, available from Rhino Records by... Yeah, it's the Monkees. They're celebrating their 50th anniversary this year, and so Mickey Dolenz, Peter Tork, and Michael Nesmith have joined together in the studio with producers and arrangers and some great musicians and some great songwriters to put together a 13-track album that comes out in May of 2016. I have heard the album. It is well worth whatever you spend for it, and the song Whatever's Right by Boyce and Hart appears on that album. And as a matter of fact, Tommy and Bobby are backup vocals on that, and Bobby plays keys on the record, and we'll talk a little bit about that. It's really an exciting time, and Bobby is just such an interesting fella, has such a tremendous gracious outlook on everything, and he's just a pleasure to know, and I think you're going to like what you hear. Speaking of liking what you hear, here's as much of Whatever's Right as I am legally allowed to play. There. So if you like that, you're really going to like this album. It's called Good Times. It's from the Monkees. It's available on Rhino Records, and it will be available in May of 2016 wherever you buy your records. Your iTunes, your Barnes & Noble will have a copy. Even Walmart's going to have a copy of this thing. So, you know, part with a few dollars and pick it up. And if you enjoy what you hear from Bobby, I encourage you to pick up his book. His autobiography is called Psychedelic Bubblegum, and it's the story of his life up to and including his time as the part of the hit-making machine that was the Monkees phenomenon, and what it was like on the road with Boyce and Hart, and what happened even through the 70s and 80s. Speaking of Monkees, I want to turn you on to my friend Emily Dolenz, who is I talked about Mickey Dolenz. This is his daughter, and she is a fantastic fine art photographer who does fantastic work, and that work is available for sale, for which you can gift or decorate your home. And we love her work, and she's always been fantastic to us. So we encourage you to check out the products that she has for sale on her Society 6 page. It is society6.com, E. Dolenz. And you can get tote bags and prints and pouches and travel mugs and pillows and things like that. And you can see the world through Emily's eyes. They are really, really nice. Great things, and we encourage you to pick those up. If you like the show, we encourage you to tell your friends, let them know about Deep Dish Radio, that they can listen on the website deepdishradio.com. They can subscribe on iTunes. They can now subscribe through Google Play Music. That's right, I am one of the shows that is on Google Play Music's new podcast channel. So that's really exciting. Or just send them the link. However you're listening, just let them know. We love it. We're getting some great mail. We're getting some great email. You can email me if you would like. My email address is tim@deepdishradio.com. That's tim@deepdishradio.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. Same thing, @deepdishradio. You could check me out in both places. There's also a Facebook page if you want to see who I've got coming up. I have some very exciting shows coming up. But I do encourage you to check us out. Tell your friends. If you really like the show, leave some reviews on iTunes. I could really appreciate that. 5-star reviews go a long way on iTunes. So log in and let the world know what you think of this show, and let them know I talk too much. So in just a second, we're going to join Bobby Hart, and we begin the conversation as we discuss how the Monkees sound was developed. With as many people putting songs into the Monkees machine. You know, you've got your Boyce and Harts, and you've got your Neil Sedakas, and you've got your Neil Diamonds, and you've got your Carole Kings, who are all writing songs, and Michael Nesmith, who are all writing songs in the early days of the Monkees. How did that come about, and how do you create something that doesn't sound like what's coming out of every other band? It's really, Bobby's so insightful. You're going to love it. He's coming up right after this.
Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart opening up your eyes to Coke.
It's Deep Dish Podcast. Subscribe today and tell a friend about Deep Dish Podcast with Tim Powers. With Tim Powers.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm on Fool It with a song I wrote with Dick Eastman. I'm on That Was Then, This Is Now with a song I wrote with Dick Eastman.
Right.
And now I'm on Good Times with Whatever's
with,
Right.
With Tommy.
That's so basically, right. Yeah, just Justice and the soundtrack to the movie.
That's really, it's not an exaggeration, and certainly other and more entrenched journalists have said it than I, that the Monkee sound is really due in large part to Boyce and Hart. It's almost inextricable, you know? And
well, we kind of gave you a glimpse into it in Psychedelic Bubblegum. I talked quite a bit about the year, the most of a year that we had the opportunity to be thinking about this project before the Monkees were cast, and before we knew that we had such a treasure trove in the voices of Mickey and Davey.
Right.
And so we did put a lot of time and energy and creativity into thinking about how to best present this new made-for-television group. And I think a big part of the sound standing up is that we made the decision to use my band, the Kansas Or Prophets, in the studio rather than what they're now calling the Wrecking Crew, which we never called them, but we did use those guys on a lot of records, Cal mm-hmm. Blaine and Joe Osborne and the guys in Tedesco. But I think that's really what gave it a credibility, because they had a challenge to create credibility for a while because of the ruckus that was started, I guess, with the Nesmith Saturday Evening Post
article
where he said, "Tell the world that we're made up they put millions of dollars into this thing, and we don't even sing on or whatever. And you know, if that hadn't happened, I don't think anybody would have thought twice about it, because that was no different than what everybody else was doing. Still, you know, you use studio musicians when you're trying to make the best record. But I think our decision to use a band that I had played with for 3 or 4 years by then, Tommy had even been a part of it for a short time,
right,
gave it a credibility that sounded like a real band, even though everybody knew these were cast actors.
Right, because you guys had the Candy Store Prophets had a groove, because you all knew each other. You'd all been playing together, so it's, instead of sounding like a bunch of session guys who were hired for the day, not to discount that, but...
No, they were great. I mean, well, like I said, we used them all the time on other projects, but for this was a new group. People didn't know them, except now they're going to get introduced to them on television. What should they sound like? Should they sound like every other record instrumentally that's being made on the West Coast right now? You know, so I think it was a good decision. And those guys were so great. And we had, you know, the Prophets and I had been playing, we were playing throughout the times when we were producing the new Monkees tracks.
Right.
We were still playing at gigs at night. And we had, at that time, decided that we'd given ourselves a name, finally, and we'd been playing for years just in clubs around L.A., but we finally said, let's try to be a group and get a record deal. So we started then incorporating some of the new songs that Tommy and I were writing, which we had not done before. Basically, we were a cover band.
Wow.
So we had been playing Words and She and maybe another one or two in clubs for a few months. So it was just the obvious next step to use these guys in the studio.
Really, really interesting. I mean, because you, it is. It's a cohesive band. And when you listen to a group play that knows each other, there's some give and take. And to the listener, you hear, you know, certain signature riffs. You hear certain signature organ riffs or a drum fill or something like that. And you go, yep, it's those guys again, which is a familiarity that I think existed on those Monkees tracks that you guys produced that wouldn't have existed if it had been, you know, the four themselves or another group of musicians, you know, hired track by track, where the lineup changed track by track.
Yeah, and the process of recording is another point about this, is that, as you know, the Musicians Union law said you could cut four songs in 3 hours, and the record companies expected us to do that. So if you're using session musicians, that means you got to teach them the track, teach them the song, and what you have in mind, what the producer has in mind for the sound and the track, and what kind of riffs and what kind of grooves. You know, and you got 20 minutes, whatever it is, 20 minutes or 30, 40 minutes.
Right.
I'm not good at math. Anyway, you get four of them in 3 hours, and at the same time, you're recording at least five to seven instruments live, you know, on a four-track machine. That's all we had. So you're recording live the four to seven instruments. So, I mean, that's quick, and that's why the LA studio cats were working as much as they did.
Because they worked fast, and they, yeah.
Like that. Yeah. But the way we worked with the Monkees was as if we were a band. We would take our guys into a rehearsal studio, work out the arrangements, get it all figured out, and then go into one of the big studios.
So you guys would, in fact, a lot of those songs were, in fact, club rehearsed. They were road rehearsed, you know?
They were, but we did, I'm not saying we did the exact same arrangements, but pretty close, because we had already demoed those songs, and that's what we were doing in the clubs.
Yeah. Crazy. When Andrew played you Whatever's Right, I know there's limited memory of those events, but what came through your mind when he played you that track?
I remembered it. I mean, it certainly came back into my consciousness.
Sure.
But even though I couldn't have sung it to you a moment before, but it came right back.
Amazing.
And the background parts were pretty wall to wall, and I mean, you're singing almost as much as the lead, so that was pretty intricate that we'd worked out, but it all came right back.
Wow. And what were the overdub well, I guess not the overdub sessions, but your sessions for the new recording?
Well, that was it. Singing background and whatever's right, and then Andrew cut a cut called Andy Partridge song called "Love." That's What I Want, or something like that, and which is really a good song.
Yeah.
And he asked me to come down and play organ, so I played on those two cuts. Now that one, "Love." That's What I Want is not going to be on the album, but he said it would show up in some form. And I remember Andrew saying one of the things it would be was the B-side of the single, and I don't know what that means today. I didn't know they had B-sides.
It is showing up on the Japanese release, so if you are a hardcore collector, it looks like that's where it's going to show up. And then, let's see, I'm doing a little quick research here. It shows up as an exclusive 7-inch vinyl 45, just like the old days, available exclusively at your local Barnes & Noble. So there you go.
No kidding.
It is the...
Well, they got their ducks in a row over at Rhino for the first time. I mean, they got something to sink their teeth in for the first time. They got something that's worth going all out on.
Yeah, it's
but
really...
I'm told that they've got an exclusive at not only at Target, but also at Target and Walmart. Now they've got Barnes & Noble doing a vinyl.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
And an extra track available only at the FYE store, so your Sam Goody's and things like that. So
FYE.
Yeah, it's the folks that own Sam Goody, and the few remaining record stores in a mall are usually FYE locations. So.
I didn't know that. They don't own Amoeba, do they?
No, Amoeba's going to be on its own. Are you going to be at Amoeba on Friday?
Nothing. No, I don't know what's going on there.
There is there's a listening party at 5 o'clock on Friday.
Oh, to play the whole album?
To play the whole album, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I'll be done.
No, nobody called me about it. I probably would have gone down, but nobody's asked me, so.
Well, I'll be there. We'll go hang out.
You are? Yeah?
Yeah.
Let me see what Friday looks like. Yeah, I could still.
Friday at 5 o'clock.
Wow.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be. I mean, the album. Let's see, I haven't heard Love's What I Want, and I haven't heard the 13th track, the one that Adam wrote with Mickey. I was there, and I'm told I had a good time. Which is a perfect way to cap the album. But I dig this record a lot. It is really, it's everything you want from a Monkees record. You know, it's got all that. If there was a list of all the things that you would expect on it, you know, a Davy song, which, by the way, they did a great job remastering.
Yes.
You know,
very nice.
And you know, when I first heard about the record, I'm like, oh man, I hope Tommy and Bobby are represented somehow, you know, even if it's just a free as a bird thing where they find an old track and just put new vocals on it or whatever, as long as they're there, you know, and the prophets are playing, it's a good thing. And and we get this, and which surpasses my expectations. I love this Whatever's Right track, and I'm like, yeah, it sounds like it was just pulled right out of there and just plugged right in.
Yeah, well, we have Andrew to thank for that. He resurrected it from somewhere, and thank God Adam liked it because he recorded it. So
yep, the backing track was originally going to be released a few years ago on one of the Super Deluxe re-releases of the original 9 Monkees albums, but it didn't make that cut, and now here we are, and we get it! Yay!
Yeah, on the right. In the right venue, it's showing up where it should be.
Right, and as a new track, and oh man, I'm so glad. And you know, did you have a right of refusal on this? If you were like, no, it's not our best work. So
no, the publisher has no responsibility
say.
to get the songwriter's permission for anything. They own these songs, and they can do what they want. Used to be in the old days when we had more of a relationship with people at the publisher. Now it's changed hands so many times. But they would call more, at least let you know what was going on. But they don't have to. They license these songs in any way they want. But, of course, I would never have said no.
Sure. I mean, the reviews have been resoundingly positive all the way down. You know, I don't know if you care to read them or anything like that. But even Rolling Stone is like, yeah, this is great. This is fantastic.
Oh, good.
And
well, I remember that the first time I heard about the new album, I believe, was from the Rolling Stone article 2 or 3 months ago.
Right.
Be More and the tour. But I haven't seen it lately. And then I was going to mention that my friend Don Graham, had a promotion at A&M Records when we were there. And,
right.
And he worked on my book last year. Just left a message when I just got in saying that in the arts and entertainment section of the LA Times today, there's a long, glowing interview about the Monkees. It's funny, I went to lunch, and I always take the Times, and I pull out all the stuff I'm not going to have time to read.
Right.
Threw that one away. So I haven't seen it, but anyways, if you haven't seen it, you might want to dig it up.
I will definitely. It was sitting in my yard this morning, and as much as I tried to prepare for this interview, I didn't get to the Times, because it never dawned on me that there would be a contemporary article about this.
Yeah.
Wow, man. It's this is really...
I did an interview yesterday, and I can't even tell you where the radio station is, but he did a live on-air interview, and then he takes that and edits it and goes to syndication for 400 stations.
Wow.
A oldie show called Rewind. And he said, but on that local station that we were doing a live interview, he said, and we've put the two Monkees tracks that are out in our rotation that we're playing that, even though we're an oldie station, we play good records from old guys. So
yeah,
he didn't say it exactly like that, but
I mean, I listen to a lot of classic rock radio and things like that, and you know, when this album came out, and you know, as new albums are coming out from, like, the Beach Boys put out an album 2 or 3 years ago, and the Zombies just...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Put out an album about 8 months ago. And I got thinking, where are these guys going to get airplay?
Yeah, they're not going to play them on the oldie stations, and right. They're not going to play them on the KISS FM, KISS 101, whatever it is.
Yeah, you know, new rock stations aren't going to play it. So the only outlets you have are word of mouth and satellite radio.
Yeah. And satellite radio might find a place. The Monkees should have a channel on what's it called?
On the Sirius XM?
Sirius XM.
Yeah, they really should, because, I mean, once you...
Probably got Cousin Brucey will play it a couple of times, maybe, but I don't know if he would. He's pretty much into the old days.
Well, we'll see what happens on Monday, because the Nesmith, Tork, and Dolenz did an interview with Felix Cavallari that I think starts airing on Monday.
On Sirius?
On Sirius, yeah, and that should be pretty interesting.
Does he have his own channel?
He doesn't have his own channel, but apparently they wanted to promote this, and the right people got involved, so... It should be really interesting, because the
John Hughes was at the studio when we were doing backgrounds on Whatever's Right, and he told me that they was supposed to hit the hit the streets on the 28th, which is a Saturday. Is that the date?
That's right. That's why the listening party is the 27th, because we'll be able to pick up a record there.
Oh yeah.
So
are you telling me that there is some kind of a network television special that will be airing that weekend or that day? I don't know. It didn't sound like it was a nighttime special.
CBS Sunday Morning, I know, is going to feature the guys. The CBS Sunday Morning show, I know, was up in on the Central Coast interviewing Michael Nesmith a couple weeks ago, and that's scheduled to air on the 29th.
Okay, that's what it is. Yeah. So the CBS Morning show.
Yeah.
On Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Sunday the 29th is when it's going to air. So be sure and check that out on your local CBS affiliate, of course. But in the meantime, buy this record because the Tommy and Bobby song on it just cooks, man. It cooks. Now your traditional axe is a Hammond B3, but that's if I listen to it right, that's a Vox, isn't it? The organ that you play
on the Love That's What I Want
on both on Whatever's Right and well, I haven't heard Love's What I Want yet.
No, I'm not. Okay, in the '60s, it might have been a Vox, but not if I had anything to say about it. There was always been a Hammond B3 in every studio, and that's what I would have been playing because that's what I know how to play.
Right.
With the cut that I did for Andrew, he rented. It was a Vox or a Farfield. I think it was a Vox. And insisted that I play it, and I said, you know, there's a Hammond sitting right there, but I know how to play. And I said, well, just do a couple on this one, and then I'll let you. He never did let me do the Hammond. He wanted that sound. So, I mean, the Stepping Stone, Oregon Lake is definitely a Hammond B3.
No question.
You can hear the Leslie swirling, but I couldn't tell you what's on him, whatever's right.
That's all right. I mean, speaking of Stepping Stone, speaking as a former 13-year-old guitar player, thank you for EGAC, by the way.
Man. Sounds cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah. Have you heard the final product, the whole Good Times album?
Yes, when I saw Mickey a few weekends ago, he said, when I get back, I'll send you the link. So he did, and so I can play it on the computer. But I haven't heard those extra cuts like you're talking about.
Yeah, I haven't heard those either. I look forward to to finding some enterprising American entrepreneur who will sell the Japanese edition, so I can pick that up. It's kind
can't
of.
Can't you get it on Amazon?
Let's see. Looks like
it's an import.
iTunes. Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's how I got some of the other stuff, and there's a second version of Me and Magdalena that apparently has all different productions. It's coming out on iTunes same day, which is a great cut. It's a great song.
Yeah, it is. And I left a message for Peter. I hope I didn't offend him because I was so impressed how great he sounded on a couple of the cuts.
He really does.
And I hope he didn't take it the wrong way. Like, well, how come you never used me when 1966? But I think I hope he knows what I mean. He sounds terrific. He's never sung better.
You know what? That's true. There are previous versions of the Little Girl song that he put on the album Track 9. For those of you keeping score at home, there's live versions and there's a couple other previously released versions. And this his voice is just so sweet. Whether it's as a result of the work that he's done. After, with all respect, the result of the work that he's done after his cancer recovery, or just the sweetness of the studio, his voice has something to it that a lot of us haven't heard before. You know,
that's right. So I'm glad I'm not the only one who's hearing that.
Yeah. So you've been doing the autograph shows sometimes with Peter, sometimes with Mickey, sometimes just on your own. What's that like for you? You know, to see the superhero people walking by and things like that. What's that like for you?
Yeah, there was a show in the Boston suburb that was like, just I couldn't believe the costumes that people were coming by with, and you had no idea who was under all of that. You know,
yeah.
There was a room. But anyway, it was fun to watch. But I never charged in my whole life for an autograph until 2 years ago. And so I was like, well, I knew people were doing it. I knew there was such a thing as autograph shows, but I said, well, you know, I don't think I want to do that.
Right.
But then when the book came out, of course, I wanted to get out there and have books to sell. So stop me if I've told you this one before, but the first thing was the Monkey Convention 2014.
Right.
And so they said, here's your table, and you just sit here and you sell your 8x10s. So just before they were opening the doors, Ian Lee from 78 Records in London.
Yep.
BBC person, morning radio personality.
He's a friend of the show. He's been a guest on the show.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Yeah, he's very funny. He's a good egg.
So I hadn't met him, but he said, can I do a quick interview? He just had a self-contained video camera. And
right.
I said, sure, before they opened the doors. So I did his interview, and as part of it, I told him what I just told you, that I'd never before sold an autograph.
Right.
And or charged for an autograph. So we ended the interview, and he said, here's there's 20 bucks on the table. He says, I want to be the first. So I autographed 8x10 to him, and handed it to him, and he said, I feel so dirty, and I know you do too. We'll never speak of this again.
That's very Ian. Yes, it is.
So I was, from then on, I was corrupted. So I've just been doing them whenever. I've only done the ones that people, you know, call and ask me to come to. So
right.
I don't know how long it'll go on or what the future of that is. But it is fun to meet the fans firsthand and see the memorabilia that they bring in and the stories that they have. And I haven't been out there mingling eye to eye with fans, you know, for
right.
40 years.
What is what's the most obscure thing somebody's brought you?
You know, like, you know, little monkey mobile plastic replicas, and they want to autograph the top of them, whatever, I don't know, just all kinds of stuff. And albums from the day, you know, 1966 albums, and some of them in mint condition, some of them all tattered and torn from years of playing, and it's just all good.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Is it something you enjoy? Do you enjoy doing the autograph shows?
I do enjoy it. It's a little hectic. My wife Marianne goes with me and helps, and it's just, you know, it's usually a 3 days. It's very hectic without much any breaks or anything, but it's fun to do, and like I said, I enjoy it.
Oh, I just realized you missed an opportunity. You had mentioned our mutual friend Ian Lee,
yeah,
who is not only a huge fan and a very funny guy, but also responsible for re-releasing the first Bobby Hart solo album, which I have in my hand right now.
There you go.
So there you go, folks.
Bye. Well, I almost brought it up when we were talking about that interview I did yesterday where the guy put the Monkey single on their playlist. He said he played as I was going off. He played My Cut of Hurt So Bad from this album, and he said, we're also playing this in rotation. So, I mean, I think that's pretty cool.
So
as you know, a record that I made in 1978, although it says 1980 somewhere in the booklet, but 78, I realized I had never put out an album as a solo act, even though I had a couple of dozen singles out over the years. And I decided I would do that, so I made this kind of urban R&B album of new material, and it just kind of fits that era.
Yeah.
But some of the cuts hold up, and I keep getting told It Hurts So Bad sounds contemporary for some reason to the new young ears.
It does. It absolutely does. And the album, if you want to hear what the 70s era Bobby Hart sounds like and want to hear a contemporary version of Hurt So Bad, it's available on 7A Records from our friend Ian Lee.
Yeah, Amazon is the way to get it. That's about, they're selling it internationally that way.
Right.
So Ian Lee's partner, Greg Grutland,
right,
told me that they dug up an old vinyl copy of this album in Germany somewhere. The record came out originally on Warner Brothers Records and a few European countries, but it was never released in the States. And so they found this, and they said, this needs to come out. And so I licensed it to them and dug up two or three other cuts, that because we had overcut for the album, a couple of the cuts that didn't make the songs that didn't make the cut of that first configuration.
Right.
So there's new material on it. And then the interesting thing happened, then I had gone to Hong Kong with my two background singers, and we'd done four or five cuts from that album in 78. So we released that video of me singing it in on that TV special in Hong Kong, Singing Hurt So Bad, and a few others. And then Vince Magna, who was the guitar player on this album in 78, and who actually replaced Jerry McGee in the Randazzo band where we all got together, the Canister Prophets first met.
Right.
And Jerry quit that group, and Vince, that's how we met Vince. And I played with him in clubs around town in the second half of the 60s. Anyway, I sent him a copy of the CD, and he said, you know, this Hurts So Bad just sounds great. It should be, I want to make a video on it. So Vince had kind of quit the music business and become one of the nation's top lemon law lawyers in Milwaukee. So he said, I've been doing these videos, just kind of humorous videos about the law and so on, and said, I'd like to make one for Hurt So Bad. So he hired New York actors and a professional team of videographers and directors, and they made this 3.5-minute video of Hurt So Bad that's, I'm not in it, it's just, you know, the actors, and it's kind of going viral. It's weird. It's up to, it's about 3 going on 4,000 hits so far, and he's working it from back there, and other people are passing it on. It's crazy.
Yeah, I saw it, and I'm like, is this legit? Is this,
yeah,
somebody who just found this, found this little, this album track from an album that wasn't even released in the States and just decided to make a video on it, or is it legit?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's got to be legit because everything's so well done.
Yeah, it's, yeah. The lead actor is kind of semi well known. He's done a lot of movies and television, and they did a good job of it. It's black and white and kind of moody in nature.
It fits the song.
A little darker than what I would have done with that.
It fits the song, I think.
It fits the song, yeah. And especially my version of it, which is, I don't know how to describe it, but Pendergrass, what was that guy's name?
Teddy Pendergrass?
Yeah, Teddy Pendergrass style, I guess. That's the only comparison I can think of.
It works.
It works. Yeah.
And it's great. It's
so
great.
Yeah, he did a great job, and it's because of Vince and the fact that he's out there getting it out, and Monkey fans are finding it and passing it on, and he's still going at it. I don't know how far it'll take this, but he's getting, you know, he's very excited about it.
Very cool.
And he was the original album didn't have this cut on it, but I put one of the outcuts, which is a song that Vince co-wrote with me, so he has that extra added incentive.
Well, it's a great way to work the system.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, my friend, has there been any movement on that great documentary?
None.
Wow.
The producers are not really performing that role. They
are focused elsewhere, shall we say?
I don't know what they're doing, but Rachel made a great piece, and a great documentary on Voice and Heart.
Right.
But doesn't have the time or energy to put into doing what's necessary to raise the money to do the licensing of the songs and the clips, the video clips. So it's sitting there. I still think when I get some time, I'll try to get back to it. I mean, it hasn't even got to the point of making a cue sheet. So that's
wow.
The first step. We're going to make a cue sheet and then figure out how much it's going to cost and then raise some money.
Wow.
So I think it'll find a home. I just don't know when and where it deserves to be seen.
Certainly should. It's a great documentary, and the rough cut that I saw, which was the same one screened to everybody else in Los Angeles. Wow. You know, it's what a tremendous story, and to keep it in the cans is not doing anybody any favors. So
no,
you know,
no, I just have to find the time to Glenn, my co-writer on Psychedelic Bubblegum. Well, Psychedelic Bubblegum, I'm gonna. We're doing a little relaunch to mark the first anniversary of its release last year, and try to spread it a little wider. The Monkees fans and the Boyce and Hart fans were so incredible how they supported it and how it stayed on the Amazon pop biography charts, number one for so many weeks, and still pops in on that chart, the top 100. Off and on, but I'd like to. What we're doing now is working on getting a wider audience for it, because I've been told that from so many people that it's just a good read, standing on its own. So
it really is. I mean, independent of its you know, the Monkees thing, which is obviously a significant point in your career, no question about it, and a significant point in your life. You still, you know, there's so much more to it than that. And I think that was my takeaway from the documentary. You know,
yeah.
I said the last time we met that you were responsible, and you very humbly, you know, kind of sheepishly shoved it aside, but you changed the Constitution of the United States. That's a pretty big deal, you know.
Well, I'm proud of our involvement in it, because there are thousands of other kids that...
Right.
We were out there beating the bushes and lobbying Congress and all, and very happy that we got it done. If somebody had said, you know, you're going to have to change the Constitution of the United States to make this happen, that 18-year-olds can vote, you know, I would have said, well, how hard can that be? We didn't know.
Right.
We were just doing it, and all the planets aligned, and it worked. And it was pretty cool.
So, you know, there's great stories in that book, regardless of how one feels about the Monkees or how one feels about, you know, that project, the stories in the book, even if you're not a Monkees fan, you're still going to take away a lot of great stuff. And it's a phenomenal read, and it's a great, if you are a fan of the era, as I am, you really get a sense of seeing that whole era, and even the era leading up to it, through Bobby's eyes, and I can't say enough good things about it. So, pick it up, folks.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words, and that's what we're doing. We're going back now to some of the fans who were so supportive and gave us such nice reviews, and asking them if they would do me the favor of. Going on some of these wider audience sites, you know, like Goodreads and those kinds of sites that are just about people who like to read, not any particular genre, and doing a little endorsement or review. So that's our thrust right now. And then Glenn and I are simultaneously working on our second book, so things are busy.
Can you tell us about the second book already?
Well, it's not a biography, obviously, but it's more in the self-help area, and it's about creativity. The title is going to be something like Five Ancient Yogic Secrets That Trigger Wicked Awesome Creativity, something like that.
I love it. I love the dichotomy right there. That's really cool. I have taken up a great deal of your time already, and you've been so gracious. Good Times is available wherever you get your music. Get it right now. Look for Psychedelic Bubblegum on Amazon. Pick up a copy. Buy a whole bunch for your friends and neighbors for various holidays and birthdays, because it's definitely worth reading. Bobby, you have an outlet here anytime you want, anytime you just want to preach to the nation. we are here, and I hope I get to see you on Friday at the listening party at Amoeba.
Well, it's always fun talking to you, and you do such intelligent interviews, and so I hope to do some more with you whenever you want to do that, and or not, but I'll be thinking about it.
Very cool. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks.